Soul Matters guide advises us that we are fooling ourselves if we think we can pursue spiritual desires without suffering a broken heart. Certainly, we can play it safe and avoid a broken heart, but as the guide concludes, playing it safe also means going numb, and we were not created to go numb. We are fooling ourselves if we think we can pursue spiritual desires without suffering a broken heart. I don't know about you, but that almost makes me want to throw in the towel before the game even starts. Do I really want to invite a broken heart? Been there, done that, not fun. Painful and hard and sad. And I'm not sure I want to go through it again. And so the question is it foolish for us to forge ahead, knowing that heartbreak is almost inevitable? But what's the alternative? Going numb? Mere existence? How fulfilling is that? It feels like the horns of a dilemma. We ask ourselves, are these really our only two alternatives? An inevitable broken heart or numbness? Makes me want to go back to bed and pull the covers over my head. Is this really what life's about? Isn't the guide really asking us to consider that engaged living involves risk, always? And the bigger and more powerful the desire, the bigger and more powerful the risk. A better world, peace on earth, honoring all people, the end to all the isms and the violence and the hate, protecting the earth and all of life. These are massive, huge desires, amazing visions, and certainly worthy of risk, despite the inevitable heartbreak involved. But I must ask, because I always ask the weird questions, is it really a choice? Is that really a choice? Is it really a choice to engage or not engage with living? Now, I know we UUs like our choices, okay? We are independent-minded folk, don't take away our choices. We don't like to view ourselves as without some kind of choice in every situation. It's an intrinsic part of our nature. So by posing the very question, I'm asking you to step outside your comfort zone. And I get that. But take a little risk with me now. For the next 15 minutes, step outside that comfort zone about choice and consider whether on an existential level, it's really a choice whether to engage or not. Because it's really an essential and existential question. It's a question about why we are here, why we are alive. Am I here? Are you here just to get by? To attempt to skate through life without really touching or being touched? To be numb? Or am I here? Are you here? To live. Where living means touching and being touched, seeing and being seen, loving and being loved, engaging and being engaged. Engaged by life, by people, by warm smiles and tender hugs, by beauty, by landscapes and seascapes, by soul-moving melodies, by puppy kisses, by the sweetness of a strawberry at the ripe perfection, by a warm sea breeze, or by snowflakes on your nose and eyelashes, your tongue and eyelashes. We are here to live. We are here to engage and be engaged by life. to touch and be touched. We are here to love and be loved. Life is not lived without engagement. It simply isn't. It can be dangerous and scary and hard. We can get hurt. And we want to withdraw. Pain hurts. No two ways around it. And we fear getting hurt again. It is a human response. And sometimes it does feel easier to numb out, to do just enough to get by without engaging, to do our jobs, run our errands, pay our bills, save for retirement, and have a seemingly endless series of mindless small talks. Feel safer sometimes. And I get it. I have had those periods in my life when numbness was my constant companion, when I lived in and through my fears, when I was more concerned about avoiding further pain than missing the opportunity to truly live. And at those times, numbness, shallow engagement with living felt like the easier path. But I look back now with much sadness and regret, for I missed the opportunity to live at those times. And I missed so many chances to engage and be engaged by life. But this is where the choice comes in. I also understand that at those moments, I did not make a conscious choice to numb out. I didn't wake up one morning to decide to disengage. It was a reaction to pain. It was a fear-induced response. I call it my fear coma. Kind of like a coma. Things happened, and I responded or reacted. Life happened out there, but not in here. And the choice I made, the only real choice, was to wake up from that coma. The choice was to realize that I was missing my life, my opportunity to live and love and touch and engage. My choice was to return to life and living, and to do so with full awareness that I might experience heartache and heartbreak again. With full awareness that loving often brings loss, hopes are sometimes dashed, peace feels like a very far away goal, and justice comes at the end of a very long arc. But the alternative was simply no longer an option. Wandering through my days, dazed by my fog of pain coma, it was and is not living. But the experience did teach me how very powerful fear is, and how very overwhelming pain and fear of the future can be. I have a profoundly deep empathy for those who have been so hurt by people and events, so hurt that they do numb out, so hurt that they self-medicate with drugs or alcohol, so hurt that they lash out to cause pain to others before they can be hurt again. And unfortunately, in our world today, it is easy to see the pain and the hurt. It is easy to see those who are suffering, broken, numb, walking through life in their own personal fear comas. My heart breaks when I hear the stories of abuse, torture, violence, trafficking, bullying, slavery, all of those. Violence breaks the spirit through pain and suffering and induces that numbness and avoidance of living, avoidance of further pain. And sometimes avoiding feeling the pain ourselves, we inflict that pain on others. And in so doing, we perpetuate the violence. It's disturbingly easy to witness in today's world where children are orphaned and violated by war and turn into the warriors of the next generation, inflicting the same suffering upon the children of tomorrow. From suffering and numbness. The only alternative is to live. It's our only choice. Hard as it may be, open to heartbreak though it makes us, avoidance, playing it safe, is not living. That, my friends, is the choice before us and the only real choice. The daily, hourly, moment by moment choice. The choice to be present, fully present to life. The choice to choose life and living each day, each hour, each moment. Numbness is the reaction. Living is the choice. And it's not always an easy one. But I know from experience it's the only one. So how do we live fully engaged? How? Despite the risk of heartbreak on a global or a personal level, despite the fear of pain, how do we keep our hearts open amidst the suffering in our world, personal and global? How do we stay open to life and living? How do we walk on that razor's edge without falling into the abyss of numbness? As my offering to answer that question, I share with you what brought me out of that numbness and what has become my daily practice, my daily meditation, and then the practice that follows. See, life happens. We get busy with the busyness of work and school and family and household and bills and friends, and don't forget Facebook. This is the reality of our lives in the 21st century world. And into this busyness of our lives, it is easy to step into attachment, easy to step into judgment, easy to step into a scarcity consciousness that breeds a me versus you hierarchy. Step into defensiveness and fear, step into disconnection from full engagement. Full engagement with life and living is a choice. It's not automatic. For most of us, acculturated adults in 21st century Western world are autopilot, and its learned behavior is a level of disengagement. Not quite numbness, but not fully engaged. Kind of on cruise control. But that autopilot is learned behavior. And to truly live, we need to retrain ourselves. We need to unlearn the autopilot, unlearn the cruise control, and relearn engagement. And to do that, we have to practice. Many of us, myself included, have let that spiritual muscle atrophy. In today's world, it is very easy to ignore a personal practice of prayer and meditation. How many of you, I'm not going to put you on the spot, I'm not asking you to raise your hands, but how many of you in your personal lives, answer yourself, engage in a practice of prayer or meditation? You don't have to. Not very many, I think, anymore. It's something we've fallen out of in the 21st century. Yet the fullness of living require that we awaken those muscles, that we start working out, that we commit to a discipline of practice. But fortunately, unlike any of those New Year's resolutions you may have made, this discipline does not require an expensive gym membership or fancy workout clothes or leave you sweaty or out of breath. It only takes 15 minutes a day. 15 minutes a day to start. But to answer how we choose living without falling into the abyss of numbness, we need to engage or re-engage a practice of prayer and meditation. We need to rebuild our personal spiritual muscles. We need to make that connection because it keeps us alive in the midst of suffering, personal or global. And along the way, when you start, you may experience those muscle cramps, right? Because we have often let those spiritual muscles atrophy. But to engage life, you work through the cramps. You keep practicing. To answer the call of our heart's desire, we keep practicing. So what I do, and this is an offering, not saying it's what you need to do, everybody finds their own path, but I know one of the questions when I have this talk is, what do I do? So I'll just throw something out there. And like good you'll react to it and reject it and find everything wrong with it, and that's okay. You don't have to do this. but I'm making an offering. I start, and my start was at night because that's what my body clock does, with a prayer practice, a meditative practice that starts with me connecting with my own, the spirit of life that's imminent in my body, the breath of life, the divine humanity, the connection to the oneness of all that is in me, and tapping into that and finding that and connecting with that. But I don't stop there. Then I tap into that and take that concentric circle out to my family, my immediate circle, my short stuff, my four-leggeds, my home. And then when I feel very connected with them, I take the circle out further to the circle of friends and extended family, my neighbors, that one step removed. And then another step out, once that's connected, to include my town, my area, my immediate environs. Then further out for the region, the state, the nation. And ultimately, and it takes practice, to feel a sense of connection with the world, with the universe. And this isn't this life-changing, deep sense of oneness that the spiritual masters talk about. But it's more than just an intellectual exercise. It's a feeling of connectivity. So that by the time I'm done, I'm aware of that oneness of creation, of the interdependent web of which we are all a part. And you are with me. When I began my practice, my goal was once a day. And after I got comfortable with that, then I added a second. And then after I got comfortable with that, I added a third around midday. So now I'm doing it morning, midday, and evening. It deepens those muscles. And now, because I've practiced, I get there quicker. I get from me to us, me to we, much quicker than I did in the beginning. And then the second step, and this is where the mindfulness piece comes in, and y'all are familiar with mindfulness. It's where you pay attention, right? You notice yourself in what you're doing. You're the actor and the observer. You see how you're responding in a conversation with people, how you respond to food and hunger, what you pay attention to yourself in a very deep way. And it's quite a profound learning experience. So now when I catch myself irritated, in monkey mind, not focused, off to 18 different places, I call myself back to that practice. Some of my coworkers may think I'm wacky, because in the middle of a meeting, I kind of take a minute. But I'm recentering myself back into those concentric circles where we are all one. And that enables me to be fully present in those moments. And to pull back from the suffering edge of the abyss into feeling the connectivity where we are one family. I practice every day. I still have to practice. I still have to call myself back to awareness. My monkey mind still takes over. Life takes over. It's irritating and annoying various things in life. It happens. And we practice. And it brings us back to engagement. It brings me back to engagement. So as I said, I present it as an offering only. Whatever specific practice you may use, what resonates with your soul is yours. But we must practice to turn off the autopilot and to truly engage, to be part of the spirit and engage with life. See, with practice, life and living feels completely different. It's not as defensive as or competitive. It's fun to actually celebrate someone else's joys without wondering why I didn't get that raise or promotion or have such a groovy vacation. Or, wow, their house is really much better than mine. Now it's just a wonderful house, and what a gift that they've received when I practice. Because none of us can truly experience the present, whether it's a moment with a parent, a spouse, a friend, a pet, a nature, with God, on a hike, with yourself. If you're living in the past or living in the future, if you're not here now, engaged, awake. Engaged living is about living in the particulars, in the essence, in the messiness of life. It is being in the experience, sensing it, feeling it, embracing it, touching it, and being touched. So the question, the sermon says, what is our heart's desire? Each of you, each of us, has a very personal response to that. But there is one desire that I believe we all share. And that is to live. To truly live, fully engaged. To be able to echo Mary Oliver in saying, when it's over, I want to say that I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. It's why we are here. It's the existential question about why we are here. We are here to live. We are here to love. We are here to engage and be engaged by life. And so how do we answer that desire? By choosing to engage, by choosing to risk, by choosing to risk heartbreak, disappointment, and pain in order to experience the richness and fullness and sweetness of life and living. In order to witness the grace and beauty and bounty and love of creation. To experience the sunset over the ocean waves or the sunrise over these mountains where the fog hangs just so. The music that echoes in our souls, the softness of a baby's skin. To experience the generosity of this planet that has perfect conditions for life, with the balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide and all those wonderful, miraculous things that are there for our notice. A planet that feeds us abundantly, where we can reach out and touch and be loved and experience the beauty and majesty and magic in connection with each other. The beauty and generosity and bounty and love and oneness surround us, fill us. They're there for us if we but awaken to them. They call us into living into that miracle of love that is our reason for being. When we are open and present, life reminds us and connects us to something more, something from which our souls yearn, the beauty, bounty, generosity, and love, that interdependent web where you and I are one. What is our heart's desire? To live, to love, to taste the rich beauty, to connect, to be one with each and all. How do we live that desire? We wait it to the end. By practice, by presence, by choosing risk and wholly embracing the grace of the universe. Despite the heartbreak, despite the potential for heartbreak, we live because in the deepest part of us, we know that it is not really a choice. It is who we are. So may it be this day and all days.